You're listening to YAP, Young and Profiting Podcast, a place where you can listen, learn, and profit. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Hala Taha, and on Young and Profiting Podcast, we investigate a new topic each week and interview some of the brightest minds in the world. My goal is to turn their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your everyday life, no matter your age, profession, or industry. There's no fluff on this podcast, and that's on purpose. I'm here to uncover value from my guests by doing the proper research and asking the right questions. If you're new to the show, we've chatted with the likes of ex-FBI agents, real estate moguls, self-made billionaires, CEOs, and best-selling authors. Our subject matter ranges from enhancing productivity, how to gain influence, the art of entrepreneurship, and more. If you're smart and like to continually improve yourself, hit the subscribe button because you'll love it here at Young and Profiting Podcast. This week on YAP, we're chatting with Peter Malouk. Peter is the CEO of Creative Planning, a wealth management firm that has been ranked number one in America by outlets such as CNBC and Barron's. Peter is also the author of several books, including the best-selling books, The 5 Mistakes Investors Make and How to Avoid Them, and The Path, co-authored by Tony Robbins. Peter's leadership in the financial industry has not gone unnoticed. He's won tons of awards, including the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award, and he was also rated number one on Barron's annual Top 100 Independent Financial Advisors list for 3 consecutive years in a row. This YAP classic is taken from our conversation, which was originally recorded for episode number 84 back in October 2020, but it's still super relevant and chock full of gems. And in this conversation, Peter shares his wisdom on all things investing, including why right now is always the best time to invest, the importance of diversifying our portfolio. We get his thoughts on the news and how it should impact our investing decisions. And we'll also learn his best guidance to plan for retirement and so much more. If you want to gain insight on how to grow your wealth from the best in the business, then sit tight and enjoy my conversation with financial expert Peter Malouk. So when it comes to money, mindset is everything. Let's talk about perspective, because I know that you believe that having like a balanced, accurate view of the world is important so that you can make good financial decisions. We tend to view the past as the golden age. We're always wishing that it could go back to the way that it was. And we tend to look at the future very pessimistically. But you say life is actually better than it has ever been. So tell us the good news. Why is life so much better now than it was yesterday? And how can that help us get into the mindset in making good financial decisions?
Yeah, there's just something about the human condition that we find a way to be pessimistic when everything tells us, all the facts point to constant progress and optimism. I mean, it's kind of amazing. I think it's funny that when people use like this phone, we call it a phone, but it's a supercomputer that can basically do things that you used to need 100 things or 1,000 things to do back in all the way back in 2007. You know, you needed to have an atlas and an alarm clock and a calculator. And I mean, we can do everything on this phone. It has more technology than what was used to land on the moon. And we'll use that phone to go complain about how bad things are today online, right? It's so crazy. And sometimes we'll do it while we're having lunch, where we might have a salad that 15 different farms were involved in getting that salad on our table. And we're paying less for it, adjusted for inflation, than people did 50 years ago. We find a way to complain despite things being not just good, but beyond the wildest dreams of everyone on Earth 50 years ago. So there is no good old days. I mean, we've been around for tens of thousands of years. Only a completely insane person would say, I would rather be alive in the 1800s or the 1500s or the thousands or whatever, back when there wasn't plumbing and heating and cooling and all the wonderful food we get to eat. And I mean, just we can go see each other more easily. Everything about the world today is better. But we're attracted to bad news. We're attracted to negativity. It's much more easy to sound smart if you're pessimistic than optimistic. And the media knows this, and they feed into all of those natural biases that we have. But if you look at everything, it's stunning the speed. Let's just take music as an example. I mean, it used to have to be live, and then we got to the 8-track and records, and we got to cassette tapes, then we got to CDs, and then we got to MP3. Now, you know, we can get any song pretty much ever published in 1 second, right? instantly in our hand. This was impossible to imagine 15 years ago. And we could do the same thing with movies, and we can all quality of life, from the average size of a home to the amount of money we have to spend on food versus things we enjoy, to the amount of money we all make adjusted for inflation. By every measure, the world is better today than it used to be. And where it ties into investing is really a bet on the future, right? So if you bet the future is going to be bad, you're not going to invest in things like stocks, and you're going to do very poorly. But if you accept not optimism, but reality, that the future probably is going to be better than today, just like every 50-year period tends to be, if we look 10 years down the road, 20 years, 30, is it going to be better? Most certainly, it probably will be, right? And if you believe that, then it becomes easier to be a good investor and not get shaken up by all the noise that's out there.
So it's so clear that things are drastically improving. And I want to touch on one point that you made just a little earlier in terms of the news. Let's talk about the media and the news for a second in terms of shaping our perspectives. In the book, you mentioned that, like, really, media is a for-profit industry, right? They're there to make money, not necessarily to inform. So tell us more about that and why that's a problem in terms of, you know, how it shapes our mind and behaviors for investing.
Well, we think about how the media makes money. So the media wakes up every day and they have a fiduciary obligation to make money for their shareholders. So if you're a publicly traded company, you have a legal obligation to your shareholders. So those are the people that own the stock in the company. Well, whether we look at NBC, ABC, CBS, MSNBC, Fox, CNN, all of these places are part of publicly traded companies, which means they wake up every day going, how do we maximize our return to shareholders? Well, how do these places make money? They sell advertising. They don't make money from news. They sell advertising. How do you get more money from advertising? Well, you have to have more viewers. A show with 10,000 viewers is going to be able to charge an advertiser more than a show with 1,000 viewers. Coca-Cola will pay more money to hit more people more frequently, right? So now how are they going to get more viewers? Well, they have to have content that brings people back. Well, we know people are attracted to negative news more than positive news. It's just a fact. And negative news is more effective. It's why for every positive ad campaign you'll see by either party in politics, 7 will be negative. People respond to the negativity more. Unfortunately, it works. They don't spend the money on negative ads just to be mean. They're doing it because it works. It's the same thing with the news. So the Weather Channel's ratings are higher when the weather's terrible. And if it's a question, the Weather Channel is not going to put people at ease, right? The Weather Channel is going to keep this narrative going as long as possible because it means more eyeballs on the screen, which makes their ratings better, which gets more advertisers, which makes more money for the shareholders, and they've fulfilled their fiduciary obligation. So if you can focus on that when it comes to investing, you know that when you're watching financial media or reading financial media, there's a tremendous incentive for them to make everything into a narrative, into a story, into a news cycle, into a crisis that keeps you coming back for more, just kind of like a soap opera. And there is a tremendous, tremendous disincentive that can't be overstated to calm anybody down. And so I think if investors understand that, they're less likely to make investment mistakes. Anyway, the side benefit is if all of us understand that, we're less likely to get all worked up about everything all of the time, you know?
Yeah. So then tell us, you say that it's now is better than ever to be an investor, at least a globally diversified investor. So tell us about that. Like, why is now? I know you just kind of set the stage, but really drill it home. Like, why is now the best time to start investing?
Well, if you think about what drives the market likes to see technology and innovation. So they want to see, are things, you know, getting better that make things easier? We know that there are advancements, there's this myth that it kills jobs, and it doesn't kill jobs at all. In the 1800s, 1 in 2 of us were farmers. You know, today it's less than 1 in 20, but we have more farm output and the job unemployment stayed the same. We then, if you go back to 1950, 1 in 4 of us was in manufacturing. Today it's, you know, less than 1 in 20. Yet we produce more goods through manufacturing because of technology and unemployment has stayed the same. So the quality of life of everybody gets better with these advancements, but those things also drive markets. We need innovation to drive markets. So one, you have to ask yourself, am I living at a time in history where there are advancements with technology and innovation? Well, any rational person has to say yes to that. The second thing we need is we need people to buy this stuff. So we need the demographics to come into play. Well, we know over the next 10 years, we have 1.2 billion people emerging from poverty all over the world. Well, what do those people do when they emerge from poverty? Well, they might buy Nike shoes. They might go to McDonald's. They might go to Walmart. These are all publicly traded companies. It gets reflected in the markets. So if we look objectively at demographics and innovation and technology, we have to say not only is it a good time moving forward, but literally maybe the best time ever to be alive with those factors mattering to the outcome.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. One thing that I want to talk about next is the S&P 500. So last time we talked about how the S&P 500 was a great thing to invest your money in, and that typically, year over year, it's an average of like 8 to 10% return on your money when you invest in the S&P 500. In this book, you guys mentioned something about the lost decade. So that's between 2000 and 2009, a full 10 years, the S&P 500 produced 0% returns. This is much different than what I had thought. I thought the S&P 500 was like safe no matter what. You put your money in there and you're good, right? And I think a lot of people think that. And we've been kind of like taught that, and it's been like drilled down our throats the past couple of years in terms of, you know, young people investing their money. You've got to do the S&P 500, blah, blah, blah. So tell us why, you know, this isn't exactly true, and like why we need to diversify in order to mitigate any risks with putting our money in the S&P 500.
Well, nothing goes straight up, and the S&P 500 definitely does not go straight up. So if you invest in the market, the S&P 500 today, the odds you'll have a positive return a year from now are 3 out of 4, 75%. That's pretty good. No one wants to bet their life savings on 75%. But if you leave it in the market for 3 years, 5 years, your odds have moved to 93%, 95%, 10 years, 98% plus. So it's really, you've got to invest it and spend the time in there. And you've got to know that corrections are going to happen. About every year, there's a correction. A correction is a drop of about 14% or more. Some years, like 2020, there's a bear market, which is a drop of 20% or more. The average bear market's 34%. Believe it or not, with the coronavirus crisis, the market dropped exactly 34%. It felt much worse because it was the fastest drop in history to that level. And there was a lot of uncertainty, and it involved health, which is obviously the only thing to many people scarier than losing their money. But in terms of depth, the average bear market. But like you just pointed out, there are very long periods of time where the market does not perform. So from 2000 to 2010, that same S&P 500 earned zero, something that normally would average 6 to 11% a year, averaged zero per year over 10 years. But over the same time period, international stocks were way up. Small stocks in the US were way up. Small stocks overseas were way up. Emerging markets, real estate, and bonds were way up. So that's the importance of having your eggs spread out in several different baskets instead of all in just one index.
Let's hold that thought and take a quick break with our sponsors. Hey, Yap Fam. Starting my LinkedIn Secrets Masterclass was one of the best things I've ever done for my business. I didn't have to waste time figuring out all the nuts and bolts of setting up a website that had everything I needed, like a way to buy my course, subscription offerings, chat functionality, and so on, because it was super easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your first product, finally taking your side hustle full time, or making $500,000 from your masterclass like me. And it doesn't matter if you're selling digital products or vegan cosmetics, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, Shopify's got you covered as you scale. Stop those online window shoppers in their tracks and turn them into loyal customers with the internet's best converting checkout. I'm talking 36% better on average compared to other options out there. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., from huge shoe brands like Allbirds to vegan cosmetic brands like Thrive Cosmetics. Actually, back on episode 253, I interviewed the CEO and founder of Thrive Cosmetics, Carissa Bodnar, and she told me about how she set up her store with Shopify and it was so plug and play. Her store exploded right away. Even for a makeup artist type girl with no coding skills, it was easy for her to open up a shop and start her dream job as an entrepreneur. That was nearly a decade ago. And now it's even easier to sell more with less thanks to AI tools like Shopify Magic. And you never have to worry about figuring it out on your own. Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, so you can focus on the important stuff, the stuff you like to do. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/profiting, and that's all lowercase. If you want to start that side hustle you've always dreamed of, if you want to start that business you can't stop thinking about, if you have a great idea, what are you waiting for? Start your store on Shopify. Go to shopify.com/profiting now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Again, that's shopify.com/profiting. Shopify.com/profiting for a $1 per month trial period. Again, that's shopify.com/profiting. Young and Profiters, we are all making money. But is your money hustling for you? Meaning, are you investing? Putting your savings in the bank is just doing you a total disservice. You got to beat inflation. I've been investing heavily for years. I've got an E-Trade account. I've got a Robinhood account. And it used to be such a pain to manage all of my accounts. I'd hop from platform to platform. I'd always forget my Fidelity password, and then I have to reset my password. I knew that needed to change because I need to keep track of all my stuff. Everything got better once I started using Yahoo Finance, the sponsor of today's episode. You can securely link up all of your investment accounts in Yahoo Finance for one unified view of your wealth. They've got stock analyst ratings. They have independent research. I can customize charts and choose what metrics I want to display for all my stocks so I can make the best decisions. I can even dig into financial statements and balance sheets of the companies that I'm curious about. Whether you're a seasoned investor or looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. In the book, you have a story of, I think it's Tony's story about his friend Jason. Do you know that story? And can you share that with us so that our listeners can really understand the point of diversification and its importance?
Well, I think Jason had had, I'm familiar with this person, he had had this very big run with real estate. And he really just thought he couldn't lose because history told him he can't lose. And it kept going and going and going. And he just was one of those people that really wanted to have an entourage around him all the time and have a lot of things, had a lot of a very public way of displaying his wealth. Ultimately, he never diversified. And the story ended, you know, very tragically for him when the housing market and condo market blew up in the 2008-2009 crisis. And had he just taken a little piece and diversified it, things would be a lot different. I mean, the more modern day story of that is someone has a bunch of money in a tech stock. The tech stock takes off. If they hold it, will it keep going? Maybe for a while, but eventually every company does itself in, and you never know when that's going to be. And so always, we always encourage people, just take something and diversify it so you're never at the mercy of having all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So the S&P 500 is really like U.S. companies. So to mitigate that, we would choose international companies to invest in, or real estate, like you just mentioned, or other avenues, bonds, whatever it is, something that diversifies your portfolio so that if something does tank or doesn't improve in terms of your return, you have other options to make money. So that makes sense. Let's talk about compound interest and why that's so powerful. You have a great story in the book about Kodak that illustrates the power of compounding. Would you share that story with us and how, you know, they almost created the first digital camera and what went wrong there?
So the idea of compounding is that things are going to double. And when things double, they happen very quickly. So you think about Kodak doubling the quality of an image, or even, most of us can identify with an iPhone, right? Like the speed with which the camera doubles, or our internet speed would double, or what we could hold on a laptop doubles, and it doubles and doubles and doubles. And it gets to a point where it's absolutely stunning what it can do. And the same thing applies to money. You know, if you have $10,000 and you're 20 and you just earn 7%, well, when you're 30, it will double to 20,000. But when you're 40, it's 40,000. And when you're 50, it's 80,000. And when you're 60, it's 160,000. So that 10,000 has become 160,000. It's amazing what that power of compounding does, because you're adding to a bigger number every time. The concept drives a lot of technology, innovate. It drives the speed with which we get technology, but it also has a lot to do with money. And so your listeners, I know your audience is very young in general, and they should really be thinking about setting aside something, no matter how small, as soon as they can, to get the advantage of compounding on their side.
Yeah. Do you have any examples in terms of your clients who have done this really well and have used compounding to their advantage?
You know, the reality is a lot of people that come to creative planning, they start out older. You start thinking about retirement, you know, when they're in their 40s or later, and then they come to us. And when we're fortunate enough, you know, to get those 20% of clients or so that are starting in their 20s or 30s, it's incredible. I mean, like all of their projections always work out, because if you're saving for education or retirement and things like that at such a young age, you have the biggest advantage that exists when it comes to money, which is time. The biggest advantage is time. If you don't have time, you've got to find a way to come up with more money or change your objectives or push off your retirement or something else to make it work. And so if you've got somebody in their 20s or 30s that's willing to start, they should just open an account and start saving as quickly as they can.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about outcomes. You mentioned this earlier, the importance of knowing exactly what you want. So tell us, why is it so important to know exactly what we want before we actually start investing and start putting our money in stocks and things like that?
A lot of us just think, well, when we want to make a lot of money. That's what a lot of us think we want. And so we then go to somebody, or we do it on our own and say, I'm going to buy things that make a lot of money. But really, we want to make a lot of money. Why? You know, to do what? Is it to have $120,000 a year when you're 63? Is it to have the money to pay for someone's college, whether it's public school or private school, for 4 years? Are we going to cover room and board or not? Is it because we want to give 10% of our money every year to charity or something different? If we have those pieces in place, which should come first, if we know what the goal is first, it becomes very easy to reverse engineer our way to how do we put the pieces in place to make those things happen? And sometimes those are aggressive investments. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes to increase the chance of hitting a goal, you get more conservative. So let's say you have somebody that's super lucky and they've got $1 million and they need $50,000 a year for the rest of their life and they're retiring today. Well, if they're super aggressive, they could actually screw up something that would work out just fine if they were moderately invested. So we really have to know what the objective is, because the objective is not always to create the biggest pile of money next year possible. It's usually to produce something you personally want, and then you back into the investments that make sense to get there.
Yeah. Let's clear up some definitions, because I think people get these confused. What's the difference between financial independence and retirement? Like, why are they actually different?
Well, I think they're very different. So retirement is you're done working, right? Financial independence is you get up in the morning and whatever you're doing, it's because you want to do it. So if you go to work, it's because you feel fulfilled going to work. If you are doing two jobs, it's because you have to. If you're writing a book, it's because you have to. Financial independence means you can walk out the door of your job, whatever you want, and go just do whatever, you know, golf or swim or vacation or whatever it is you want to do every day. So financial independence is a liberating feeling, because it's hard to be anxious about anything when you know you're choosing to do it. No one's making you do it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's helpful. It's helpful when you think of your outcomes, because it's like, are you really planning for your financial independence or are you planning for your retirement? They're two different things. Okay, cool. So in your book, you talk about the need to have a number of plans in place before we ever start investing. You talk about things like a net worth statement, retirement projections, education projections, insurance projections, risk management, estate planning. So many different things that you cover. I don't think we're going to have time to cover all of them on the show, but what are some of the plans that we should really focus on before we ever start investing our money?
Well, I think you should at least have two or three things clarified. So, I mean, one, what do you have today? What are your assets and what are your liabilities? That's all a net worth statement is, oh, I own a condo, I have an IRA, I have a 401k, I have an investment account, I have a car. Maybe that's the net worth statement. And then the liability side of the net worth statement might be, I have some student loans and I have a mortgage and I owe some money on my car. And so the assets minus the liabilities gives us your net worth. Some of those assets bring money to you, and some take money away from you. So we have to distinguish between those two. So a house might be an asset on the piece of paper, but really we pay to have the house every month. Even if it's paid off, we've got taxes, maintenance, insurance, we're paying to have that asset. Versus if we have an investment account or a rental property, that's paying us usually, you know, every month something. So we need to start with that. And then we just have to set some simple goals. When do you want to be financially independent? Do you want to pay for your kids' college? Are you trying to get a debt-free? Let's get two or three goals in place, and then let's say, okay, all these assets and liabilities on our net worth statement, how should we make those assets work for us to make those goals happen? And how do we get the liabilities contained so they don't get in the way of our goals?
You break it down so simply, but it seems so complicated at the same time. So in terms of somebody helping us make these decisions, I know the importance of an independent financial advisor is very important. Could you tell us the difference between what a broker and an independent financial advisor is?
So a broker, about 90% of advisors are brokers, and brokers basically don't have a fiduciary obligation to act in their clients' best interests all the time. So that would allow them to use their own product when their own product might be a little more expensive, or sell an investment with a commission when there's a way to buy that investment commission free. About 90% of advisors fall in that bucket. And then about 10% are independent. Independent advisors cannot make a commission on a mutual fund, for example. They wouldn't be able to sell a variable annuity, for example. And I'm not saying those things are always bad. I'm just saying, well, I guess a commission on a mutual fund is always bad, but most of the time they are. And so I think that if you have that independent advisor, you at least have somebody who's legally obligated to pick the best investments they can for you. And that should, it's sad that that has to be the starting point, but that should be at least a starting point for choosing someone to work with.
We'll be right back after a quick break from our sponsors.
Young and Profiters, I've been a full-time entrepreneur for about 4 years now, and I finally cracked the code on hiring. I look for character, attitude, and reliability. But it takes so much time to make sure a candidate has these qualities on top of their core skills in the job description. And that's why I leave it to Indeed to do all the heavy lifting for me. Indeed is the most powerful hiring platform out there, and I can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. With Yap Media growing so fast, I've got so much on my plate, and I'm so grateful that I don't have to go back to the days where I was spending hours on all these other different inefficient job sites, because now I can just use Indeed. They've got everything I need. According to US Indeed data, the moment Indeed sponsors a job, over 80% of employers get candidates whose resumes are a perfect match for the position. One of my favorite things about Indeed is that you only have to pay for applications that meet your requirements. No other job site will give you more mileage out of your money. According to Talent Nest 2019, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. Join the more than 3 million businesses worldwide who count on Indeed to hire their next superstar. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/profiting. Offer is good for a limited time. I'm speaking to all you small and medium-sized business owners out there who listen to the show. This is basically free money. You can get a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/profiting. Claim your $75 sponsored job credit now at Indeed.com/profiting. Again, that's Indeed.com/profiting, and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/profiting. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
For people around my age or younger, like, when should we actually start thinking about having an independent financial advisor? Because from my perspective, it seems safer to do it by myself for now, right? So is that the right way to think? Or is there like a certain benchmark we should hit before we actually go seek out an independent financial advisor?
Well, I think if you can get a great advisor, you're almost always going to be better off with that advisor. I think there's a reason that the higher net worth people go, the more likely they are to work with an advisor, because the higher net worth tend to be to know the difference an advisor can make. But the problem is most advisors will put you in a worse spot. So like, if you're just starting out, it really is pretty simple. Open an account, max out your retirement plans at work if you can, whether it's with a 401k or open a Roth IRA, and put as much money as you can into those things. And if you have debts that are high interest rate, like if you're paying more than 6%, whether it's credit cards or somehow you have a mortgage or student loans or car loans at those rates, pay those down before you invest, because you've got a guaranteed 6 to 10 to 20% on those things if those rates are high. It doesn't make sense to go invest if you've got credit card debt at 15%, because you're probably not going to invest and earn 15% year in and year out. You may as well take the guarantee of paying down the card. So getting the liabilities under control and maxing out a 401k and Roth IRA and investing in indexes is probably what most people that are just starting out need to do. If they get over $50,000, $100,000, they really should consider at least looking for an independent advisor.
I think that makes sense. So you just mentioned a Roth IRA, and it reminded me of something in your book What tips do you have for somebody who actually works at a big corporation in terms of how they should invest their money and what advantages they should take?
Well, some corporations, not all, but if any of your listeners are fortunate enough to work for a corporation that has a match, they should definitely take advantage of the match. So what I mean by that is if you have a 401k plan at work, it means you're allowed to put money away without paying taxes on that up front. So let's say you have a listener, they're making $80,000 a year. They pay taxes on $80,000. But let's say they take $10,000 and put it in the 401k. They won't pay taxes on $80,000 because that $10,000 goes into the 401k before that. So only pay taxes on $70,000. So that's big advantage number one of putting money in a 401k is it's not going to be taxed today. It's not taxed till you withdraw it decades later. The second advantage is the money grows tax-free. And the third advantage is we get compounding on our side by doing it earlier. But some corporations make it even better than that and say, look, if you put some money in the 401k, we'll match it. So they might say, look, the first $8,000 you put in there, we'll give you $8,000. Well, that's 100% return on your money. So all of your listeners should basically go to their employer and say, is there a match? If there is a match, they should at a minimum put that much in their 401k plan immediately. No matter what's going on with the rest of their net worth statement, they should be doing that.
So even if like, because 401k, from my understanding, they're actually like investing it in other stocks and things like that, right? So like no matter what they choose to invest that money in, you're saying no matter what, do it and get the match.
That's right. If there's a match, doesn't just definitely do it. And then from there, within the 401k, you get to pick, is it the S&P 500, if that's in the plan, or is it international stocks, or is it bonds or real estate? The plan, if it's a good one, will have a multitude of options. But definitely don't miss out on that match.
Cool. So the next topic I want to talk about is insurance. I think that millennials, we don't really talk about insurance. People tend to think about insurance when they're older, life insurance, things like that. What do we need to keep in mind when it comes to insurance in your perspective?
So insurance is, if you don't have insurance, the plan can really, really blow up. I mean, you can be on track for everything. And if you die and you have a young family with young kids relying on you, what's going to happen to them? Yeah, maybe you're on track to be retired when you're 60, but if you get hit by a bus when you're 28 and you've got two little kids, how are they going to go to school? How's that house going to get paid off? How's your spouse going to continue to live? Are they going to pay for childcare at home, quit the job? What's going to happen? So you want to protect against that problem with a term insurance policy. A term insurance just means you're buying insurance for a period of time or a term of time. So it's not permanent, doesn't stay with you your whole life, but if you're 30 and we know that your kids will be out of the house and your house will be paid for by the time you're 50 and you'll have savings to take care of your spouse when you're 50. Well, we're not worried about 50 and later. Everything would be okay if you're around then. We just need insurance to get us from age 30 to 50. So we'd buy a 20-year term insurance policy. It costs very, very little, usually hundreds of dollars, and solves a big, big problem. And you want to look at that through all parts of your life, whether it's about insuring against a disability or your home burning down or a car accident or whatever. We don't want the family to lose everything, all of their wealth, because you didn't get some low-cost coverage to protect you against a really adverse situation.
I think that makes sense. So this really drives the point home in terms of having to look at your financial plan like very holistically instead of in silos. Tell us more about that. Like what else do we need to consider when financial planning, and why is it so important to look at the full picture and not just like little silos?
Well, if you think about it, what people really want is they want to be secure and accomplish their goals. But to do that is not just one thing. It's not just saving money. It's not just a 401k. It's not just insurance. It's all the aspects of growing wealth. You know, what am I trying to do? How do I get there? It's all the aspects of protecting your wealth. How do I not lose my wealth because of a problem that happened along the way? Someone slipped and fell on the ice on my sidewalk. You know, how do I not lose all my wealth over that incident? And then it's how to transfer the wealth. Like if something happens to you early, whether it's an incapacity or death, how does that move in a low cost, private way to other people? And so all of those things are part of the same plan, and we have to be thinking about all of them. It's not as complicated as it sounds. I break it down step by step in the path in the book, but you really have to look at all of them, because if one thing goes wrong, it's enough to derail the plan.
Totally. Cool. So I think this was a great discussion. In terms of the book, is there anything else that you want to drive home to my listeners, or anything that you think we should touch on?
You know, I've written another book, The 5 Mistakes Every Investor Makes. I wrote another book with Tony, Unshakable. This one is really the first time I've written about step by step, you know, how to do all of these things. And so I try to make it very, very clear. you know, here are the components of building wealth, here are the components of protecting wealth, here are the components of transferring wealth, and here are the things you need and why you need them to get them done. So hopefully I've laid that out really clearly. I did my best to do that. And your listeners can, you know, pick up the path on Amazon or any bookstore. And they can reach out to Creative Planning by going to our website, creativeplanning.com, or they can follow me on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook as well.
Awesome. Yeah, I highly recommend it. I, you know, read it end to end. I think it gives great strategies. A lot of the stuff we also covered back in episode number 72 in terms of like how the markets work, what's the difference between a bear market, a bull market. So I would definitely recommend to go back and check that episode out. The last question I ask all my guests is, what is your secret to profiting in life?
I view profiting in life as more just trying to enjoy life. And I think the secret is priorities, just knowing what really matters. I feel like I know what matters to me. And I focus my time and energy and the things that I'm thinking about in my mind on those things as much as I possibly can. And it has resulted in me, you know, enjoying life a lot more than before I really thought about it with that kind of clarity and just kind of got up and went about my day. And so I think, at least for me, just really knowing what my priorities are, what I'm focused on, has made a big difference.
I think that's sound advice. And it goes back to what you were saying before, really knowing your outcomes so that you can have the right plan so that you can effectively achieve those goals. I think that's great. Thank you so much, Peter. It's always such a pleasure to have you on Young and Profiting Podcast. We're so grateful to have had this conversation with you. And we'll put the link for your book in our show notes.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Oh boy, Young and Profiters, this conversation was money for anyone and everyone looking to secure and protect their financial future. Like Peter said, you can't predict what's going to happen in your life. So setting yourself up to have some financial protection if and when something happens is super important. Time is actually the most important factor when it comes to investing. You want to have as much time as possible to let those investments grow. So even if you can only invest a small amount of money, it's important to start right now so you can take advantage of compounding where your investment grows every single year. And over time, this can add up to so much moolah. So you don't want to wait. And also for those of you who work at generous companies that have financial plans like 401ks and matching, take advantage of that. You're working in corporate, so you better milk it for what it's worth. And remember that 401ks are not taxed until they're withdrawn. And that money also grows tax-free. And as you get older and you start making more money, you realize that like tax-free is a really big deal. So the earlier you do this, you get more compounding on your side, and this can be a huge opportunity for wealth creation. So don't miss out on it. And most importantly, Peter says to really consider what you want out of your finances. Having specific financial goals, like knowing the age you want to retire, or if you want to pursue higher education without having to take out a loan, instead of having broad goals like, I want to be rich. I want to be rich is not going to get you anywhere because it's too vague. You won't be able to make clear decisions. You won't make smart investment choices. And you also won't know how much risk you're willing to take. So think ahead. You've got a plan for your financial future. And remember, you can always get an independent financial advisor if you want some help with us. All right. So if you learned something new from this episode, drop us a review. Give us a 5-star rating. That is the number one way to thank us at Yap. And let us know that you think we're doing a great job. You guys can also find me on social media. I'm on Instagram at Yap with Hala, or you can find me on LinkedIn. Just search for my name. It's Hala Taha. If you enjoy our content, make sure you do reach out. Drop us a review. Reach out to me on social. Those are the best ways. You can also text me at 28046. You can text me anytime. Any question you have, just to say hello. Let me know what you thought about the episode. All right. Well, thank you so much to my amazing Yap team. You guys are amazing. This is your host, Hala Taha, signing off.